music goes away. GloucesterCast 186, big packed house. Packed house. You can hear everybody breathing over here. A lot of stop coughing, everybody. Yes. No, it's just Kim and I, Kim Smith and I.
Good morning, Gloucester.
Yeah, we're going to do our best to fill the time with good quality information and not misinformation, because we talked about a bunch of things that we really had no idea about earlier in our show notes, but we think we got things squared away. Big post of the week goes to Bridget and her husband Neil Matthews with the deer versus coyote pictures. Really, the narrative was great too. Bridget's narrative, you know, you really felt like you were there.
Yeah.
With the deer in the Mill River,
right,
and had the nubs of the antlers were knocked off it, so it had like blood with it.
Yes, I thought that was
kind of interesting.
Yeah, that was interesting too.
I wonder if the coyote was like, they're just like, you could see their eyes were locked on each other from the photos.
Yes,
like the no matter where the deer was, his head was craned around to make sure he knew where that coyote was at all times.
Yep.
And I wonder if if the coyote smelled the blood from where the antlers were, and that's how he tracked them down, I wonder.
Wow, that's a very good possibility. Right? I didn't think of that. A dog's sense of smell is their most powerful, or, you know, canine. So I know that's true with the dog, so it must be all members of the canine family.
So as the deer stayed in the water, because obviously, I guess the coyote doesn't want to go in the water.
You know, that's funny, because you would think, but I don't think they do like going into the water.
Apparently.
Yeah.
And so
they haven't swum over there, because Martha's Vineyard and Nantucket are coyote free, so they haven't swum over there yet.
So they're like, the coyote would retreat into the woods, and the deer would kind of get closer to the shore, and all of a sudden the coyote appears again.
Yeah.
And
that's how I learned that. That's how they are.
Yeah. So I sent it to my friends at CBS, because we've got a really good working relationship with a couple people at CBS, and they put it on their website, and I think then Fox picked it up, and this morning Channel 7 picked it up.
So that's exciting.
Congratulations to Bridget and Neil Matthews for awesome post. Got a lot of play yesterday. This week... Well, this month is Gay Pride Month.
Right.
The month of June every year is Gay Pride Month.
Right.
And Friday, you were there. Kim was there.
Yes.
At the City Hall for the raising of the LBGT flag.
Yes. Now, I just was wondering, is it LBGT or LGBT?
I think it's probably LGBT. Lesbian, gay.
I think it's
bisexual, transgender.
Right.
So,
anyways, it was wonderful. It was a great sense of community spirit, and the Mayor Safatia was there, and Margaret Ferrante, Senator.
Big smiles
Tarr.
On everybody.
Yeah, yeah. It was really
positive.
Very, very positive. And I love that they did it at Grant Circle, but I just think it's extra special that it's moved to City Hall.
Yeah,
because I think of the day before they had raised an orange flag.
I remember why was this such a big stink when Carolyn Kirk did the flag at the?
Well, because it was the very first time. It's just hard for, you know.
That's what it was.
Yeah, I'm sure. It takes a while to affect change. Like, you know, it wasn't very controversial this time. You know, the biggest controversy was. Just people unhappy with, the whole bathroom thing is. That's why I put that Just Pee video, because there's a little undercurrent of controversy going on about the transgender bathroom thing. So
there's a big undercurrent.
Yeah.
Like it's so funny how it divides right down the hardcore conservative line versus the liberal line. Just like everything else, so everything's just polar, and there's no middle ground.
Well,
and to hear some, I don't want to. We can't get into politics.
We can't get into.
Yeah.
Too bad.
It's very disappointing to hear the way some people talk in this day and age. I cringe when I hear some people talk, and the way they think about.
Did you hear that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I sounded like a coyote, right? I heard it in my headphones.
No.
I'm like, imagining things?
No, you know what? They were very active this morning also. Like, from around 7 o'clock, I could hear them outside my bedroom window. And usually I don't hear them that late in the morning.
I guarantee you the people that listen to the podcast could hear that yelp.
Wow.
That was a coyote yelp.
Oh, actually, you know what it is, Joey?
What is it?
There's a road race out there. I think it's
a coyote. We just got done talking. We're not going to talk out of our ass. Because we're only talking about things that we know about.
We have coyote fever around here.
We do have coyote fever. Yeah. Oh, that's hilarious. I have been hearing them lately. Have you? In our neighborhood? Because we live in the same neighborhood.
Right. Oh,
like, this past week, they've been very
active. They're so active. Yeah. And every night when I'm filming, like, anywhere along the back shore, as soon as it's the road race.
They're hooting and hollering?
Yeah, they're hooting and hollering. Because when I pulled in, they were going that way. Maybe
they're cheering people on. I'm trying to see out the window.
Just be quiet for 1 second.
It's people yelling.
Yeah, it's people screaming. Yeah, they're cheering the road race. That would not a great day for a road race. It's a coastal road race. So, you know, you're like, oh, wow, you're going to be able to see the ocean, you know, drain along the ocean. The fog is so thick right now. I can't believe I have boats fishing today. Wow. I can't even believe I have boats fishing today.
Well, then let me just say so every night when I'm filming at dusk, I hear them gathering. Like, as soon as the sun goes down, it's just a huge coyote powwow. And I think they've been, like, running around doing their various things, and they meet up at dusk.
Are they in the rut right now?
No, that's already... Because there's the pups are already born now. Yeah, the pups are already born now.
So. Does all the species have their pups at the same time?
Most wildlife
like when the
in
eggs
our area,
hatch and
yes, because you know they need time to, they mate in the late summer, early spring.
And then they get fat over the winter.
Right. Well, and nurse. Also they need time for the little nestling or the little wild creature to grow. And there's tons of food around here. That's, you know, this is a breeding ground for a lot of different
the bunnies.
Species.
Yeah. Jesus, driving to work in the morning, the bunnies are moving. You know, this is. You know, we have so many recurring themes.
No, like bunnies.
Insane amount of bunny rabbits in East Gloucester. I think they're probably everywhere. But Jesus,
they are everywhere. Yeah. Everybody complains to me that they're eating this and that in their garden.
Oh.
Yeah, I hear the whole bunny story all the time. So I came out of my. I told a client, I haven't seen as many bunnies as last year, and then. I came down my garden path 2 days ago, early in the morning. There was a bunny sitting on the path, and I said, hi, little bunny. And three more from the side came charging out, and they all ran off together, four little cottontails together.
Four little cottontails.
It reminded me of Peter Rabbit. And
there you go.
You know, Mopsy, Flopsy, and
speaking, we got off track on the lesbian gay thing.
Yeah.
City Hall is going to be recognized by Secretary of State William Galvin. He's presenting a 2016 Massachusetts Historical Commission Historic Preservation Award. Yeah. So yes. I wonder if they make that so that it'll qualify for some kind of grant to, you know what I mean? And sometimes
that will allow them to...
I wonder if there's a money that is attached to that, or if by... Oh, sometimes when you list certain assets as historic or something like that, then it opens up funding from certain avenues and stuff.
Yes.
I don't know what
perhaps,
the story is, but...
Yeah. Well, William Galvin is on the head of... is on the board of the Massachusetts Historical Commission, so I think it's very exciting that it's being recognized. Really, really exciting. All the people work so hard to do that. You know, especially I think Maggie Rosa spearheaded a lot of that. So, didn't she?
Yeah,
I believe so.
Yeah, there's a big group.
Yeah.
I'm going back. We're gonna double back over to the gay thing again. You know, what's amazing. I'm definitely getting old, obviously, but. I think the kids in their 20s right now, this term, gender fluidity.
Yeah.
I think there's. I have a feeling that like there's a, and I was talking to Michael Barna, from Passports, gay guy. And, you know, we were talking about we were talking about, I know what the conversation was. Conversation was, I was at lunch with Alicia DeWolf Cox, Jesus, Alicia Cox, and she met this guy, and she went out with him, and you know how there's that, like, certain guys, they go on dates, or you've met them, but they seem very effeminate?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. And but they don't identify themselves as
either.
As but, gay. You know, they identify themselves as hetero.
Okay.
So I was talking to Michael Barna, and like, you know, so the question to Michael Barna was this, because Michael Barna's a gay guy. Mike, like, are those people like in your it was a question.
Yeah.
In your experience, Mike.
Right.
Those gentlemen that you talk to on the street that have very, you know, like their cadence and the way they talk and seem very effeminate, you know, it seems like they could be gay,
right.
But they don't identify as gay. Do generally you end up finding out later that they are gay?
Right.
You know, that was the question to him. And his response to me was this, it was very interesting and probably, obviously, it seems like to be the case. That nowadays, you know, back even like 10, 15 years ago, there was this big divide, you know, there really wasn't, people didn't celebrate being gay as much as they do today. Now there's so much gray of this term, gender fluidity, where, you know, there's a lot of the young people right now, they're just all over the map, and it's not like a big deal. Yeah. They don't really define themselves as anything. They're just like gender fluid. They're just like, oh, whatever's going on today is what I'm. That's the way I'm going to spend it. And it's just, he said, you know, there's a much larger subset of people that are gender, that are just, you know, going whatever, doing whatever they feel like doing, as opposed to like the rigidity that it used to be, like, you know, as far back as the 80s or whatever.
Well. You know how you were talking about not talking about things that you don't know that much about? I don't know that much.
Yeah,
about.
Yeah. No, I don't either. That's why I asked the guy. That's why I asked the gay guy, right?
Right.
So, it does seem like nowadays, like, you know, television and everything else, like, there's just like a lot more.
Well, there's I think there's so much more acceptance, and I think
way
that,
more.
And
yeah.
I think that just is, you know, that's a good thing that's happening.
Like, yeah.
Each generation now, you know, but also I do think that we live in sort of a bubble in New England, especially. We live in a bubble of acceptance that there are certain, you know,
the not as tolerant, like,
yeah. Oh yeah. My God, yeah. Have you seen that show on CNN? I can't pronounce the guy's name. It's KAMU. He's a black man, and it's the United Shades of America.
No.
And it's a fabulous show. It's just really fabulous.
What's the premise?
Well, he just goes into areas that you wouldn't necessarily feel comfortable in as a black person. He spent one whole episode was him spending time with members of the Ku Klux Klan and going to their compound and learning how they educate their children against. Yeah, I mean, it was
must-see TV.
It was wild. It was pretty wild to hear these people talk. So I feel like in New England we are more in an acceptance bubble than perhaps you know.
Or California. You know,
in California,
the liberal states,
or you know, or areas where there are a lot of universities, you know, like university towns. That's a different situation, whatever. But it was pretty. It's pretty intense.
Yeah,
and you know, we were talking about this earlier. You know,
I'm talking to Rocky. So you know, this is a whole different thing of like, you know, tolerance or whatever. You know, so I was talking about. Black guy Rocky. Rocky, he's a friend of ours, comes down the dock, he hangs out with us. He's very, very dark skinned, and he grew up in Boston during the busing. Really like intense. He tells me some really intense stories.
Yeah.
And so we're talking, and so I told him how, you know, back when I was single, how I dated this really dark skinned black girl, how beautiful she was and everything. And And he's like, well, did your parents, you know, could you be seen in public with her? I'm like, what? Right. I'm like, what kind of question is that, Rocky?
Right.
He goes, what do you mean? What kind of question is that? I go, this isn't, you know, the 50s. Like you really right. don't think like I like
this is the 80s, right?
Yeah,
right.
This is like right. the late 80s. I'm like, and you know, in his mind, like, you know, like white guys didn't take black girls out. I'm like, right. Really? I'm like, right. you know, you still right. think that way, you
right.
know?
Right. Well, yeah.
And but you know, he right. went through so much during that time that in his head, you know, I'll talk to him, and he's, you know, he, even though he's friendly with us and he knows that, you know, we're not racist or anything like that, like, some of the rhetoric that comes out of his mouth is like, every white guy is like, you know.
Well, that's one of the things that this guy, I'm just going to call him Commie. I don't really know. You're going to make fun of me. I don't know how to pronounce his last
name. The host of that show.
The host of the show was... So the host of that show, I think his name is, I think you pronounce it Kamau, it's Kamau Bell. And he was, so one of the Ku Klux Klan members said to him, you're just assuming that we're all racist. And Bell said, no, actually, when we were talking about racism, I was thinking about some black people that I know who are pretty racist. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, yeah,
so,
yeah.
Yeah, so it's like racism is, you know, prevalent on both sides. That's just...
And that's what the host said that.
Yeah, the host said that.
The Ku Klux Klan guy said, you're assuming we're all racist?
Right.
In the Ku Klux Klan?
Right, but it was a comment he had made, and then, so that's when he said that. And, of course, the rhetoric, that was, they think what they're saying is totally normal, that white people should live separate from black people, that white people are just, you know,
superior
and yeah, prefer yeah. it that way, and, you know, and jeez. Black people probably prefer it that way too. This was the Ku Klux Klan person's
take. Is this in like the foothills of Virginia?
It was somewhere down south. I don't think it was Virginia. I think it was further south. I forget where it was, though. But it was just so phenomenal and so brave that he went and spent, you know, he saw how they homeschool their kids.
Jesus. You lose a little bit of faith in humanity when you see that.
Yeah.
But then you come home and you see...
But then you see this guy... you know, there with them and bringing, you know, shedding light on it. So
So last week, I think the national story of the week was the Cincinnati Zoo, the 400-pound gorilla, the
silverback.
The silverback
gorilla is very rare. It's very special and very rare.
And the 4-year-old child fell into the pit there and the gorilla kind of, you know, tossed it around a little bit, and the zookeepers... they decided that they had seen enough, and the gorilla could have killed the child. And
I think we're probably both in agreement on this. I mean,
they had to take the thing down, right?
Right, they had to.
Yeah.
I saw the footage like 20 times, because every time he turned on the news, the gorilla is so strong, so powerful, like...
400-pound gorilla. They said that the gorilla could squish like a non-ripe coconut with his hand, which is...
And at one point, it looks like the gorilla is trying to protect the child, but the gorilla is incredibly confused. And so he's just, like, dragging the kid around in the water, and just the dragging alone, even if he wasn't trying to hurt him, he could have very unintentionally hurt him.
Yeah. Well, here's my take on the situation. So, there's going to be a lawsuit, right? So you're the zoo administrators, right? The zookeepers, responsible for Cincinnati Zoo, right?
Right.
And you're assessing the situation, and even if you think there's a 10% chance, like a very slim chance that the baby's gonna, you got first of all, you got to protect the baby, right? But if you look at it from this. Could potentially take down the zoo forever and ever.
Right.
If there's... So the baby gets killed. Right. That's an $80 million lawsuit.
Right there.
With your eyes closed.
Right, I didn't even think about it.
Right, with your eyes closed.
Right, I didn't even think about it.
There's going to be a lawsuit regardless.
Right.
Like, you know, they're going to, that family is going to probably get, I bet you they get a couple million dollars, right?
Really?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Because when you think about this, what does a zoo cater to? Families,
right.
Children.
Right.
To have a gap that a child could slip through to get fall into the cage, into the thing.
But for 36 years, they had nobody.
It happened.
It's been approved and accredited by every zoo, you know,
zoo
police or whatever you call it.
I get it, but it happened. But it doesn't matter in this day and age of lawsuits.
Wow.
It happened.
I didn't even think of lawsuits, to be honest.
Really? Okay, so naive, Mitch. Yeah. So the zookeeper who's in charge of making sure, you know, making sure this zoo is viable from here to eternity. Well, we're gonna get screwed one way or another. But $80 million coming out of the funding. A lot of people lose jobs and everything else. Versus, you know, our insurance policy might be able to cover the $2 million in liability for this. You know what happened?
I don't know. It was the decision was made in such a split second.
It wasn't. No, they observed the thing at least 10 minutes.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. That seems like
that's not a split second.
That seems like a very short window to make that kind of a decision. Do you think they were?
You saw them dragging the baby back and forth.
I know, but what
for 10 minutes? That's 10 minutes in that kind of circumstance is a lifetime.
Yeah, I guess you're right. But I'm just saying, overall, you know, I don't know. Do you think that? I don't really think they were. You're probably sure that they were thinking of lawsuits.
I think ultimately they're thinking of the, you know, okay, there's a chance that this baby might get killed.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
But on top of that, because nowadays it's not just that, right? Like, I was a little bit surprised that there wasn't more outrage that over them killing them.
There's huge. It's like there's a giant petition going around, like, a million people have signed it and stuff like that. I mean,
I'm surprised it wasn't more though.
Yeah.
Because remember Leo the Lion? There was a predator for that guy. Yeah, that lion. That was a sad situation. But he was actually being stalked. That was a different situation altogether. I don't think you can compare the two.
I don't know that story at all.
I'm not even sure if it was Leo, but there was a lion that was, there was a guy. That there was some preserve in Africa, and they were going on these. You don't remember this story? It was last year.
Oh, that guy. Oh, that Kurt. That's a terrible story. The guy went into the sanctuary and
killed
this beautiful
that like everybody knew.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. Different story.
It was a very, very large lion too. Yeah. And
this is a large gorilla. So there are some similarities. It's a different situation.
It's a different situation. But, you know, I read, too, that genetically what's happening with, like, these large species of, like, lions and things like that, over time, because they're always hunting for, you know, 100 years, they've been hunting the largest. The hunters always look for the largest species.
Oh, yeah, because they want to mount them and stuff.
Right, so now, the lions are actually getting smaller because only ones left to breed are the smaller ones, are the physically smaller ones. So, and you know, some might say the weaker ones as well. But anyways, it's very sad. It's very
sad. Yeah, I mean, there's no winners in this. Yeah. There's no winners.
Yeah, but the Cincinnati Zoo, I've been a number of times with my family, and it's a beautiful zoo, and they really, you know, they really try to maintain it. If you can call it any zoo beautiful. I'm not like a huge zoo fan, to be honest with you. I think there's so many.
Actually, they're great for kids, though.
I think there's so many other ways that kids experience wildlife now that, you know, I think
that's just kind of the new thing in the last 10 years or so where any animal in captivity is like a terrible thing.
Well,
orcas. And,
right. Certain things shouldn't. I mean, like, for example, like at the Cincinnati Zoo, they have the cat house, and it's horrible. The cats are in little tiny cages. It smells to high heaven in there. But there, you know, there are other alternative things that you can do while you're there. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My take on zoos are a little bit different. I think that we're spoiled because we're like in nature here, like
right.
you know, like we're surrounded
by nature.
We have the Audubon societies and all these places where you can see nature and wildlife and stuff like that. And I think, like, especially people in the middle of the country and stuff, I think that zoos actually, for the handful of animals in relation to the larger populations of animals that are actually kept in zoos, I think it actually, when millions of children go through those zoos mm-hmm. and see these animals, it actually is a net positive because they develop an appreciation mm-hmm. for nature and animals, you know, because they see them and they look into their eyes, you know, maybe, you know, sparks a lot of imagination for them.
Yeah.
And as opposed to the, you know, end all be all of a handful of animals, you know, as souls or something like that,
right.
that can't be kept in captivity. Well, I think, as you know, it, probably the money that's raised and the awareness that is done at zoos for animals and the goodwill that's created on behalf of animals at zoos probably far outweighs the, you know, the lives of the animals that are, you know, in there.
Okay, well, I agree with you on a certain level, but there are some animals that are so highly intelligent, I just think that they should never be captured and put into captivity. Mm-hmm. But zoos also serve a purpose of, if an animal is injured or captured and can't be rehabilitated for whatever reason, you know, a zoo is a great place for that. Zoos do provide a tremendous amount of educational services and things like that. However, you know, like big cats and like orcas and things like that, I just don't think that they should be held in captivity. Well, you know, particularly orcas, they were they're separated from their, you know, oftentimes they're captured separated from their mother at a very young age, and they're very intelligent mammals. And
I know there's a huge it's like probably the number one outcry against keeping, you know, the orcas in the, that's probably the one that gets railed against the most. But again, I see on my thing, and I'm not just, you know, you right. have your opinion, I have mine. In my opinion, children that go and see those orcas and those things come away like with a huge love of the, you know, and by the time they go through that thing, love of the ocean, wanting to care for the ocean and marine life. And so, I don't know, that's just, you know, differences of opinion.
Well, I'll tell you something. I credit the Cincinnati Zoo with my interest in butterfly gardening, because I was there with the kids were really little, and I didn't want to go through the cat house because it was just, you know, stunk to high heaven. It was, you know, kind of gross, but they all wanted to go. So I just said, well, we'll just hang around here. And there was this beautiful butterfly garden display there, and it was covered with butterflies.
Oh.
And they also have a very famous insect house as well, where they have all kinds of interesting insects. But anyways, I just was like, wow, that was, you know, it was beautiful. And it was very
inspiring. How long ago was that?
Like
20 years ago?
Yeah. At least.
That's wild. Butterfly gardens are becoming a thing now.
Yeah, but I think they were really ahead of the curve there in that respect.
Right,
yeah.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Like back then, you didn't hear about them so much, so that must have been a...
To actually see that it was actually covered with butterflies, you know, you plant this and you will get a butterfly, and it was really...
Now, were they inside of nets, or were they just...
No, it was just...
Oh, really? It was out in the open?
It was out in the open.
See,
yeah.
The one in Naples is all inside of...
It's netted, and they have all kinds of species there where they import all the butterflies into something like that. And they're oftentimes not native species of butterflies. These were native plants with native butterflies.
That brought the butterflies in because of the plants, which is part of like that program that you do every year.
Right. Right.
With, you know, the are you going to do the milkweed thing again?
You know what? I'm planning...
I'm very busy, I know.
Yeah, I'm very busy, but what I'm hoping to do is have seeds available for the premiere of my film. So I'm not selling, and you know, the last couple of years, it was very difficult to get milkweed. Now a lot of the nurseries are carrying, Wolf Hill has Asclepias, they can't keep enough of it. So, you know, so all that, you know, it's all just getting information out there. That's my main thing. Not necessarily selling plants and seeds, but
you're upset about the way someone categorized caterpillars this week.
Well, actually, it was Channel 5 News, and they were talking about how caterpillars are destroying the trees, and they never once said winter moth. They showed winter moth larvae. They showed the damage from the winter moth, but they never once said winter moth. And it was, I just thought, oh, well, that's very detrimental because you're just lumping all caterpillars together. So we have this one invasive species called winter moth that, you know, does create a lot of caterpillars. However, we have all our wonderful beneficial caterpillars as well, or beneficial insects and beneficial caterpillars. So
the winter moth caterpillars, the little green ones.
Yes,
they
look
like
green.
They call them vampire.
I haven't heard that.
Oh, jeez, I tell you, so they hang down from little
spindles. Yes, they hang down from the trees.
Yeah, that's why we call them vampire. those things, it's too bad that the news station did the story like that. But I will tell you this. At my house, when I had my house in Hamilton,
yes, they were,
those things were. No, I mean, they chewed the tree to pieces.
Right,
there was nothing left.
They're creating, they are very devastating, especially to certain species when a tree gets defoliated 3 years in a row. But, however, like I've said this so many times, I don't want to sound like a broken record. The Palace of Versailles, the beautiful gardens there. The head gardener there, Alain Berton, 10 years ago said, we're not spraying the trees anymore. We're going totally organic. And as soon as they stop spraying the trees, the songbirds return to the garden, and a wonderful natural balance. And this garden has to look pristine, you know, 24/7.
I didn't spray my trees in Hamilton. Believe me, I wasn't spraying my trees, and they're still there.
It's ineffectual, anyways. There's nothing works on the winter moss. So you might be able to spray one little area, say, but then the maple tree above it that they're munching on is going to drop down you know what I mean. So
somebody told me to put orange slices on the trees, and it attracts something.
It attracts Baltimore Orioles. Orange slices in trees, I know, attracts Baltimore Orioles. So I don't know what else it would attract, but
I don't know.
But so when that photograph that I put up with the song sparrow with all the worms in its mouth, those were all winter moth larvae. And so it was, that's, if we, the more larvae there is, the more it encourages the bird and the birds, and the more successful the nestlings will be if they're getting lots of food. So then we'll have even more songbirds. So don't spray your trees.
There you go. There's a bottom line from Kim. Well, we're on this whole nature kick. Why don't we go through it with the plover update?
The plover update, I have not seen any babies yet. So that's all
but
I can
But the plovers
report.
Are still there?
The plovers are still there, yeah. And if you go at like 7 or 8 in the morning, they're usually back to nesting. You have to go really, really early to see them.
You're encouraging people to go down there?
Everybody's down there.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Oh, it's the beach.
It's the beach.
During the day, they're there.
Right?
Yeah, but if you wanted to see these, if you wanted to see them, before 7 o'clock in the morning,
yeah, you gotta go early because they're very active first thing in the morning. They're hungry. That's so true with so many.
Did you get a hold of anybody to allow you access?
No, I did get a hold of somebody from Mass Audubon because when I had asked you about the environmental police. I had already sent an email to the Mass Audubon people, to Jack Clark, and then he referred me to this woman, Kathy, who's in charge of the Coastal Bird Program, and she was very adamant that I not follow anybody in there because it would...
Open up a can of worms?
No. She was afraid of predatory birds would see us walking near the nest, would see any attention being focused on the nest, and then that would cause perhaps predatory birds to.
Yeah.
But, you know, I haven't emailed her back yet, I've been so busy, but she did very nicely offer to allow me to photograph some killdeer eggs. So that might do it.
There you go.
So we'll see.
This past week, Cape Ann Farmers Market We talked about last podcast because Donna is our Magnolia denizen,
right.
And she told us that, you know, and she really nicely brought up about the Magnolia, which is on Mondays.
Mondays, Farmer Market.
And the Cape Ann Farmers Market. So the very next day after the podcast, we talked about the Magnolia Farmers Market opening, I got an email from Nikki Bogan, who's in charge of the Cape Ann Farmers Market, that, which is at Stage 4 Park, saying it opened up last week.
Right.
And it's going to go through October.
Right. And it's their 10th anniversary,
right.
Which is very exciting. And they're, you know, there's some concerns up there that the changes that they're making to Stage 4 Park, they might be pushed into an area that isn't, you know...
They talked about that last year. Is that still an ongoing thing?
Yeah, there's an ongoing thing. And they haven't quite determined... They were talking about putting them in the parking lot and, you know, redesigning the parking lot, but that isn't going to be viable. So now they're talking about putting them on a sloping hills, kind of. And, you know, I personally think that they should design the new design around where they are already located, because where they are located is very ideal. And they should, but they're thinking about changing that location because they want to put a different kind of path. Well, let's be real. The farmers market is very, very successful where it is. It shouldn't be on any kind of sloping hill. They should.
I don't know, if it's on a sloping hill, it doesn't make any sense because people have to load and unload trucks there.
Right.
You have to back trucks down.
Right. So it should stay right where it is, in my opinion, and they should design the path around where it's located. They're trying to make it a more of a connecting, make it more connecting.
Is this Steve Winslow? Because he was involved with the exploratory thing last year, but it's still going on. Maybe I need to talk to him and get like more details about
where it is. I went to the CPA, I went to the community preservation meeting. I saw the diagram of where they're, you know, the different things that they're thinking about.
The same diagram from last year?
No, it's a different one.
Oh.
This just happened like a month ago. Uh-huh. So I just think we should be, I think our main thing.
What are some of the features on the new diagram?
The connecting paths, basically. That was, they want to make it more of a cohesive flow through the...
So that people can, more of a walking thing?
Right, and they're also talking about, like, creating more grassy areas, but... The thing is,
isn't it all grass up there?
Right. You know what? You can't spend so much time and money on grass. It's just, you know, people are going to be walking up there. You know what I mean? They're trying to make. I think if I now I'm.
I need to. You know what I need to do? I need to talk to. We need to get. We need to talk to Steve Winslow, and because the reason why is because we don't want to. I don't want to like.
No, we don't want
discourage or disparage whatever they're trying to do there without actually knowing what it is.
Right. And also, I think that, I think what needs to happen is the farmer's market needs to be really present at the table with these discussions. So
why are they not?
I don't think they do have a representative there now. I don't think they do.
Well, they have input. They don't make changes without having meetings and letting them speak their voice.
Yeah.
So they have input.
Have some input.
And my guess is that they, you know, the amount of people that are up there, and there's some power brokers up there involved with the farmers market, if they squawked, that they're not going to screw them up.
No, they don't. But see, they don't want to squawk. They want to be. They want to keep things. You know, they're trying to. Everybody's trying to work together.
I'm the kind of guy that doesn't like to squawk either.
Right.
You know, but.
Sometimes you do that.
If they're really freaked out about it, they need to come talk about it.
Well,
maybe we could have Nikki in here talking about it.
Oh, yeah, let's do that.
Yeah, I'll talk to we'll have Nikki. Nikki's great. She's a great guest, too.
Yeah.
We did a podcast
with her. A podcast with her on that stage.
I want to do another. We get a nice day. I want to go up there and do another podcast at the Visitor Center.
Yeah, that would be
our friend Charlene Delaney is up there.
Yeah. Oh, she works there.
She's a volunteer. Yeah. So this coming weekend is the Strawberry Festival, the Bridge Cape Ann and Mile Marker. I think they work together, and they do the Strawberry Festival, and it's one of my daughter's favorite events.
Oh, wonderful.
So they give away there's a lot of swag, walk-through, there's a lot of local artisans. Some very cool stuff. It's packed,
really?
Too, so get there early.
I've
last year the parking was pretty tough, so get there early and get a parking spot.
And is it an all-day thing?
I don't have the dates. I mean, I don't have the times. It's a Saturday, and it's pretty much an all-day thing. Okay. I don't know exactly. Okay. A simple Google search would tell you that.
All right. Maybe you'll put it in the show notes.
Yeah, I'll have to do some extra work. Trying to avoid that. Schooner Challenge is tomorrow.
It's tomorrow night,
Tomorrow night, Monday.
Yeah. So the Schooner, Lannan, Ardell, and Adventure. All in, and I believe that there are still a few remaining seats left, and you can, I said it was from at 6, but I think they want people there at 5:30.
Yeah,
so,
give you instructions and stuff.
So go at 5:30 tomorrow and get ready to have fun and sail.
Great take. Money goes to, I think, restore the Ernestina.
Yes, another.
Or the Evelina Goulart Morrissey. I'm not sure if it might be the same boat as the Lose Track. Essex Shipbuilding Museum.
Yes.
That kind of thing.
And they're all great guys involved in that. They're really cool.
I've yet to meet a schooner guy that wasn't a good guy. Fun,
really?
Or fun to hang out with.
Really, huh.
Except for the really crazy ones that move here from someplace else and decide that they're going to be Mr. Schooner. Like, and they... No, that's all right. We're not pointing out anyone in particular.
I know.
But you know what I'm saying? Like the obnoxious desk jockey that moves here. And I love people that move here. I'm not saying people shouldn't move here, and they shouldn't. And I'm not saying people shouldn't get involved with the schooners. But don't act like you've spent your whole life on the sea, wear tie the ascot, around your thing with the Greek sailor's hat. And it's all fun. It's all fun. No, they're all great people. I went finally, the bee place, the honey place where Donnie gets the cough drops.
Cough drops
was open. And I got some.
Did
yesterday.
You have some with your did you go with your girls?
I went with my girls.
Yeah.
And we got the honey cough drops, and they are just like I.
Where are they? How come you didn't pass one out?
I should have brought some up. I have them in the car. I had them in the car. Eloise had about 4 yesterday. I had 2. I think Madeline had 2.
It's not like regular candy, right? Because it's made with honey.
Yeah, it's a cute shop, though. I want to get the guy in, but they seem very shy. I don't think they're going to end up coming in for the podcast. But it's right next to Tally's. I don't know what they call it. There's so many different Tally businesses in town. It's on
133, right?
133, yeah. Going towards West Gloucester on the right-hand side where they do the stickers. We have lobster traps. This is the time of year where kids graduate from high school, from school, and they're looking for something to do in the summer. Our lobstermen, they can buy them right from the lobstermen. There's lobster traps for sale. They're $25 a piece. Mm-hmm. They're ready to go. They're ready to go lobstering. So you can come down and get some traps.
I have to tell you something. I want to go lobstering sometime.
To actually lobster or to capture it on film?
To do all of it. To photograph it, film it, and actually pull up lobster traps.
Don't pull them by hand. You know there's a machine, right? Well, I mean, some people do, but if you were going to go out on one of my boats, it would be...
Yeah, I've always wanted machine. To go out. I want to go out with one of your fishermen.
Why don't you ask Mark?
You know what?
My friend would take you.
I know, but I'm afraid I might get seasick, and then I might wreck the... I don't know. Because they go out in the ocean, right?
This time of year, they're not fishing too far away. Most of them. So there's that. Muhammad Ali died. What did Muhammad... If anything, what did Muhammad Ali mean to you, Kim?
I remember... since my dad was an athlete, and I remember when Muhammad Ali... refused to go to the Vietnam War, and that really upset my father. It really, really, My dad, and when you're a child, that's those kind of things really stick with you. And I was kind of old enough to understand that. I thought it was a good thing. So
that he didn't go.
That he didn't go.
One of his convictions.
Yeah, that was. I mean. So, but, as a young girl, I'm not really thinking about Muhammad Ali too much. But I just thought, that struck me back then. And then later reading about him, I just admired him for making a stance like that.
It was interesting. I found out yesterday morning early that they passed. I found a nice video of, him talking, because he was such an eloquent, funny promoter of his, you know, the craft. Right. A lot of it was an act, which is great.
Yeah, which is great.
Yeah, because it's great for the sport.
Yeah.
So we were talking. I told my, so Madeline and Ella was with me yesterday, and we were in bed, we were watching, I was showing them some videos of Muhammad Ali, and Madeline, the youngest one, who's usually pretty flighty, you know, she's, you know, her memory isn't that great, but she's, and she's funny, but she's like, oh, that's Muhammad Ali from the song that we sing, The Rapper's Delight.
Oh, that's so funny.
1976, I think they grabbed it.
Oh my gosh, that is
so
funny.
That was her association with Muhammad Ali. Huh. And so what was interesting, we were talking about this, I don't know if we talked about this on the Homie Cast or not, but we're talking about the heavyweight champion of the world. And all of my growing up until probably about 7 or 8 years ago, maybe 10 years ago now, you knew who the heavyweight champion of the world was.
Right.
You knew who it was. Bob and Hagler, right. You know.
Whoever
it was, because, you knew who it was. It was a big thing.
Because of all the light that he shone on the sport, right?
Him and others. Yeah. I mean, it wasn't just him.
But he was really like, I think he led by example, right? Like people saw.
Well, yeah. I mean, there was some crazy heavyweights. I mean, like Mike Tyson, Evander Holyweight, you know, there's all different styles and stuff like that. But the point that I'm trying to make right now is like if I told you what the name of the heavyweight champion of the world is,
today.
I guarantee you, I didn't know who the guy was. I didn't recognize, if you would have said it in the conversation and didn't associate it with boxing or the heavyweight champion, I wouldn't have known.
Who do you know who it is?
Someone said it, and I forgot. and I was a big boxing fan. My buddies and I in our 20s and thirties would go. You know, we would drive into Boston where they would have the fight on.
Oh, really?
You know, and you know, where they would have pay per view and pay like $20-$30 to watch the heavyweight fights. We're big fight fans.
Well, there's kind of a resurgence of boxing in Gloucester, right?
With the young guys.
And Desi...
Amateur boxing.
Desi Smith took those beautiful photos. Yeah. And I know Joey DeSilva, because...
The DeSilva family. Carlo and Joey DeSilva, yeah. But it's, it's just kind of, you know, people talk about the MMA. You know who the female... MMA fighters, you know, Ronda Rousey, you hear her.
You hear her name all the time.
Her name. Right. Well, she lost, actually.
But you still know of her.
You know of her. Right. And Conor McGregor, you know of him. Right. And, you know, so that is more in the news. This sport that relatively came out of nowhere in the past 10 years seems like it has totally displaced boxing. Mm-hmm. And if you would have told me that 10 years ago, I would have said you were crazy.
Right.
So that's pretty wild.
Oh,
I'm really happy. The solar thing with Steve Linsky. People are really positive on Facebook. Really positive response to that video I did with Steve Linsky. Great things about both guys.
Okay.
Like Steve Linsky's automotive service. Like,
right.
He's been around forever, and he's just as honest as the day is long, and Tim Sambor and people say really great things about
him. Well, Tom's getting more excited about doing it, just because me coming home and telling him about all the things.
He should watch the videos, because I think the most important thing is to listen to people that have had a year experience with it, and the testimonials.
Yeah.
Because, anyone can say, you know, anyone that has an affinity, I'm beating a drum that I've beaten a million times, but anyone that has an affinity for green energy can, you know, well, they have a propensity to say, oh, yeah, it's all wonderful. There's no downsides to it and everything else.
Right.
But, like, when businessmen that are all about business make financial decisions to put in solar and it's based on money, that's what my ears perk.
Right. Especially small businesses. No, he's very excited. And as soon as things slow down for me a little bit, you know, right now is, like, my nonstop time of year, but...
I think it was really cool that you could, like, on Steve Linsky's business, he's got a, you know, commercial thing, a flat roof. I went there to do the interview with him. I'm like, well, this isn't going to be very visual. You couldn't see it.
Right.
Like, it was not visible because they had the flat roof. You couldn't see it at all.
Wow.
Did you see the installation they did at Northeast Cleaners?
No, I didn't see it.
Have you been to Stop and Shop in the last 2 weeks?
Yes, I have.
That's pretty cool, though, because it's on that thing. You haven't noticed it.
No, I haven't.
Take a look next time you go by.
Well, yeah, I have something that needs to be clean, picked up there as well.
Oh, know these things? That's pretty cool.
It's just a time of year when I'm like, you know, kind of have blinders on with work. So
our friend Jeremy, Chef G at Passports.
Yes, he said he is. He and Alex and Eric, they are so funny back there.
They love their job.
Yeah, they are funny.
Bacon marmalade. Did we talk about this last week? Or did I have it at that point?
I don't think you had it. I think we talked about it midweek when I stopped in.
Not on the podcast, though.
No, I don't think we talked about it on the podcast.
So Jeremy, I believe I'm gonna link to when he tells me where he's gonna have this. I'm gonna tell people where to go. He's selling bacon marmalade, and it is as decadent a product, a food thing as you can as you could possibly imagine.
A lot of preparation goes into making that. Alex was telling me it's very cooked down for a long time and
I don't even know what he's charging for this. I imagine it has to be quite a bit, but maybe it isn't. It's all relative. You don't need a lot.
You don't need a lot.
And we wish Jeremy all the best. He's such a great guy.
I put a little on we put it on Alex brought a jar home and Tom was having a burger, so he put it on that, and I said, I'm just going to try it on this steak, because Alex had made, he and I, steak, so, and even though steaks never need anything like that, it was really, really good, even on the steak. It's just amazing stuff.
Layer of fat, sweet, creamy fat on top of it. Yeah, it's great.
Well, I saw that video that you posted of Jeremy making those burgers. Those burgers looked insanely delicious.
I want to hear a funny story about that. So I went there. Jeremy says, you know, can you come do a piece for me at Passports? So I get there, and I had made plans to meet Alicia
Cox
at there for lunch. So I'm in there, and I'm taping the video with him.
Right.
And she is calling in. She's calling me while I'm taping the video. So when you call, my phone vibrates,
right.
And it's ringing. So it's ruining the video. It's just, you know, so which is whatever, right? There's an option on the iPhone. It's like, you know, you just on the Android that you just swipe and it sends them a message. Can't talk now. Call you right back.
Okay. Yeah.
Because that's so you don't have to type it all out. You can resume what you're doing.
Oh, that's, I like that.
And it's fantastic, right? So she
is
calls two
app?
More times.
Is
so
that
she,
an app or is that
no,
a
no? It's just part of the
part
system.
Part of the phone. Okay.
So I'm resuming taping. I'm like, okay, I got it under control. She calls two more times. So I'm like, oh, whatever. So you know, finally she got the hint or whatever. Maybe. So I sit down to eat the burger, and she comes in. She starts giving me shit. I'm like, what part of the thing didn't you get? I'm like, I'm trying to. So it's like, I get, like, you know, it's frustrating when you're trying to get a hold of someone. But if someone sends you the message that I can't talk right now, they call you right back, there's a reason they're sending you that message.
I've gotten that message before, and I always just think, oh, you're, you know, got a boat in or something, you know, you'll call back when you can. And you always do. So.
Yeah. Well, most of the time, unless I'm completely cooked. I want to. Unless you have any, do you have any other topics?
No. Did we go down our?
I have one more thing I want to talk about. I want to thank Heidi Dallin and our friend Lindsay Krause for inviting me and my daughters to be part of Lettuce and Lovage, their performance last night. We were also there with Charles de Beaubien, Gaspien, Debibu, or something. I can't forget his name.
Don't ask
He's
me.
Three part last name. He's an awesome guy, East Gloucester guy. And his beautiful family. His daughters are absolutely beautiful daughters. So we had a lot of fun backstage prepping for our
troop.
Scenes.
Your scenes
like
to be
that.
Tourists.
To
right.
be tourists in the production. And it was really funny play. I recommend everybody go see it. But I really wanted to thank Heidi and Lindsay. Mm-hmm. Lindsay spent a little time with the girls. She was very generous
with
her time.
That's a very sweet. And also let people know that people can everybody can be a tourist.
Yeah, you just have to call in.
You have to call in and ask.
Not everybody. They have a limit, I imagine.
Right, they have a limit every night. But if you're going to see the play, you can also be in the play.
It was thrilling.
Yeah.
It was thrilling. It really was. And it was really nice of them to do that. Go see Lettuce and Lovage.
Yeah, and you posted some pictures of the girls, and they look so cute in their costumes, too.
Yeah, I don't post many pictures of the girls nowadays, but that was one of those situations where I really wanted to capture that time, Lindsay Krause, Academy Award-nominated actress.
Right.
And
all-around nice person.
Yeah. And Heidi's so great. People that are interested. Oh, so
Heidi's the best.
She's really great. She doesn't get paid nearly enough for what she does. But it's one of those labor of love jobs where they're never going to pay you a lot of money for when you love your job. It's rare that you make a lot of money because there's a million other people that would love to do it.
But she does so much.
In the summer, she has these. I think it's a 6-week. 2-hour class for children,
right?
Acting classes.
Is there any way your girls could ever do
that? I don't know, because they're pretty busy in the summer. Yeah. They get a lot of activities, soccer and stuff. But
I've just heard only the greatest things about it, and I've seen the results. You know, all the young people who come up through Heidi's programs. She really brings out the best of people.
So I want to tell you a cute story. We're gonna finish with this. About last night. So Charles de Beaubien Gaspier, I can't get his name right.
From East Gloucester.
Charles, great guy. So he had this plan so that they were supposed to go see the play as a family last night. And his mother-in-law was supposed to go with him. So they called her and says, "We're running a little late, go into the play because... you know, we don't want you to miss the play, but we'll be right along." So she goes into the play, and they were tourists in the play. So they surprised her. They came out from behind, from backstage, and surprised her, which I thought was a really cool.
Oh, that's so cute! Thing. Oh my god, yeah, that's
loved
fun.
It. So anyway, this is Glosscast 186. Thanks for being my guest today.
Okay, Chief. Well, yeah. It was fun.
Get another one. 14 away from 200.
What are we going to do?
I don't know. Something big.
I don't know.
The hotel.
The hotel.
I talked to Sherry.
Oh, you did?
No, I got to talk to Sherry.
Okay,
I'm sure she's going to let us do it.
Okay.
We'll make it happen. All right?
Okay.
All right, for Kim Smith, this is Joey Shimatar. Another Glosscast in the books.
Yeah. Very nice.